Hey everyone, it's Matt from the Matt and Dan Show, aka Today New Brunswick, Tomorrow the World. I am Matt Stranick, and my awesome friend here, as always, is
Dan Hayward.
Yeah, and I think anybody who's watching the show, you may know us personally. You probably know us personally because you know Dan and I kind of travel with the same crowd of people with wide variation, of course, but on our social media paths, there's a pretty wide amount of overlap. And the fact that we spent, you know, our younger and more formative years in Fredericton, right? So you were more north side Fredericton, right?
I never lived on the south side until I moved back as an adult. Until I went out west and then came back.
So you're like Devin, right? Can I see that?
Like Devin.
Tight. Yeah. He's from Devon, folks. This means a lot if you don't know. Okay. In our world, this means a lot. That's all. I'm your basic Skyline / South Park or South Wood. I said South Park, but I'm in South Wood. Middle class, but not really. I was more on the lower middle class side of things. Sort of Dunn's Crossing, Big Street thereabouts. For the majority of my time during those years. So it was like I'm on the south side, but I still had a chip on my shoulder a bit. This whole convoluted intro, and there is an intentionality to this. I don't want to say I'm surprised it's taken us this long to get to this topic, or whether we sort of just needed to let it gestate to reach the present moment. Dan, as you probably maybe you don't know this, he kind of runs the topics, and I, you know, kind of handle more in terms of the format kind of stuff. It seems to be working. And at this point, Dan was just like, we did our thing about, the BC artists and scenes that we kind of dig. Dan was more about the scenes, and I was just kind of my kind of grab bag of albums and whatnot from British Columbia. And I believe it's going to be sort of a similar approach. I was sort of thinking we're going to go from west to east, or maybe we're gonna do a scene episode and then just do some other topic and whatever. But Dan was just like, "Nah, man, we're doing it. We're going to full Atlantic Canada on this one." So can you just speak to that a little bit, Bud? Why the thought as to that right now?
Honestly, it was just sort of I was just at a bit of a panic of like, "Huh, what are we gonna do the next episode?" And I was like, "Well, we could just do because I feel like." Atlantic, the music of Atlantic Canada, specifically, like, the, you know, especially, like, from around when we grew up and onwards, like, we could talk about that for more than one episode if possible. So I figured we could just sort of touch on some things for now, exactly. And then, you know, other topics, and then we'll revisit it. So, yeah, maybe we'll revisit it at some time. But I was just thinking, like, what the heck? And honestly, it's been since we chose this topic, there's been some stuff that I haven't listened to in a while that I've been listening to a lot lately that it's just been getting me.
I have so many questions. Like, you know, I mean, I don't know, like anybody, I don't encourage you at all to listen to the education podcast. But if you just ever do for some weird reason, you're going to know that I'm like weirdly and career to the point of it's in my career. And I'm kind of just obsessed with media formats in general. So I'm just like looking forward to the, do you remember that demo tape and this and that, you know, kind of, you know, the CD they burned and then, you know, like, man, it's just, yes. Like the physical media, the independent arts. I mean, I would not be aware of any of this if I hadn't started going to all ages shows in Fredericton in my early teens, you know, and it was pretty, pretty life changing. And I don't, you know, really, you know, I kind of, it's like there's graduation with my doctorate and there's the birth of my kids. And, you know, like it's maybe a couple of levels below that. But still, it's like I wouldn't be doing any of what I'm doing right now, or at least in the same way, had I just kind of not been somebody who was easily swayed by the people around me. And just like, yeah, man, I guess that is what I like. And then just kind of ran with it. So, I mean, that was kind of my entry point, man. You want to talk about yours a little bit?
Well, it was honestly.
I know we talked about this before, you know, but like on previous shows and whatever. But I'd be interested just kind of hear within the current situation, the current show.
My like my introduction to like the local scene in Fredericton specifically, it was like a lot of it was because one of my best friends when I was a little kid got kicked out of Devon Junior High and wasn't allowed to go there. No teachers would have him. There's a minuscule chance. Guy. Hi, Ryan, if you are watching or listening.
I'm the same guy.
But yeah, Ryan, a.k.a. Wally.
Wally! You
know, yes. He and I grew up together in Devon when I was in kindergarten. Yeah. Wally's parents lived upstairs from my family in like a duplex on Gibson Street, like literally right next to the train tracks. Man. Like just on the literally on the other side of the tracks.
I actually shared living
one of those like apartment here and then another apartment on top kind of deal.
That's one of the ways I became friends with John Bowie. On in the south side, Rankin Street, you know.
On Gibson Street when I was a little kid. This dude Ryan Hoban, aka Wally, lived upstairs from me.
Straight up, very cool dude.
He's been in, you know, a lot of bands on the East Coast and the West Coast as well. He's acting. I think he's teaching in New Brunswick now. Actually,
a lot of people are teaching in New Brunswick. Some very cool people got their B contracts recently. Nice. Which means
I saw like, that. Yeah,
on Facebook, man. They're tenured. Yeah. They're tenured at Fredericton High School.
That's
well
cool.
done, Tripp, and well yep. done, you know, Chris Jackson, if you're listening, which you might be. So, congrats, dudes. You deserved it.
But anyways, when Wally got kicked out of Devon Junior High, he started going to George Street.
Too troublesome for Devon! That does say a lot.
Yeah. When he had to go to George Street, he started hanging out with all the skateboarders over there and got into the scene over there and then would come back. And I was like, you know, the weird fat kid, like, from a couple blocks over that he'd, like, play Dungeons and Dragons with sometimes. And, like, we're standing in the backyard with sticks. Like, that kind of shit.
John Bowie was my cool skateboarder friend.
Yeah, but, like, he was, and yeah, then...
Anyway, you're describing very similar things here, dude. But
Yeah, for sure. But anyways, like, Brian would just, like, or he'd come back with, like, yeah, man, these shows, like, this arcade downtown called the Mega Spot. You know, bands play there.
The thing is, I never went
to any of those shows. Like, also, but like the first person from the punk scene that I became friends with when I started in high school was a guy that was in my junior achievement group that my parents made me go into, who was this kind of scary skinhead dude named Blair.
Listen. I would just like to take the moment here and say, And this isn't even like you're not pulling me on this trajectory at all. But I'm just saying, anybody that we talk about in this context of the show, we mean with full respect and full affection.
Exactly. Okay? But this guy, I found, like, I remember
Blair. Blair was a huge guy. I remember Blair from Captain Donut. Okay.
Yeah. That's exactly. Right. It's like the people like that. That was like my first encounter.
That was your moving into the scene.
When I was in June, it was like, you heard that my friends of this band and they're playing a talent show, and I was like, oh, really? And I just hear about all these other shows happening, and eventually there was like something at the Market that like I think CHSR put on with. CHSR. I remember the band. It was
okay. So can you just sort of like? I'm sorry to keep barging in.
That's okay.
So did you start going to shows and then volunteering at CHSR?
Yes, because I heard about CHSR through going to this show with, like, it was, like, this band Ricky Lizard, who were kind of like a shoegaze sort of thing. And, but, like, Steph Tierney, I think, played bass in that band. Who's a pretty cool...
I just remember, there was Rail and there was Ricky Lizard, was there not?
Yeah, that was... It was the same... Yeah, it was them just before they turned into Rail.
Yeah, and there then, we go. That was, like, just before Druids, I started going to shows. Yeah, right there.
And anyway, this band called The Druids, who had actually been around since, like, the early 80s. But they had, like...
Did they wear capes? Like, were they, like, full...
No, well, I think they might have originally.
Okay.
Because originally they had... the singer for this band, Skeleton X, who I wish had recordings out because they were
wild. That's all I can say. That's what I heard about them.
Like, and Martin from Skeleton X was the original singer from the Druids, but then they sort of turned into more of like Nick Oliver, who I will probably mention later on as well, who did the like Sunday Night Punk Rock show on CHSR.
Yeah.
He played drums for the Druids, and that was sort of like yeah, that was the first time I saw him play in a band. And then I just like found out about CHSR, and like I loved that old show WKRP when I was a kid, and I thought radio was really cool, and I was like, oh, you can just like go do radio. So I started
Did you ever, when I was a kid, like my parents always just threw whatever, you know, media thing at me just to see how I'd respond, which was actually pretty forward thinking of them, come to think of it. But they gave me like one of those like big bulky like cassette recorders, and you could like, you know, so it was like, you know, you could record yourself talking, and you could do like a rudimentary almost tape edit with it if you were compelled to. And man, it's the same kind of thing as what you're talking about. It's just like, you just use them what's at hand, and then you're friggin', you're finding your way into the thing, right? It's so listen, folks, we actually, and we spent 10 full minutes here doing an intro, which just goes to show you how enthusiastic and a bit nervous probably that we may be to speak to this. So again, I'm just gonna say, man, like, I'll just put it out there. I was never a musician type within the scene whatsoever. I was the guy who was like, just, you know, I had a job at McDonald's. I funneled whatever money I got from that into like, you know, going to Backstreet Records, going to shows, and getting drunk. There was no thought in my mind as to like, you know, like I'm going to save for university or anything like that. I'm just like, I'm going to just have myself a time. And that included going to the shows. And, you know, we all kind of contributed in our various ways. And I'm not at all going to say anything about spoken word or poetry or anything like that, just because we're just going to go down a rabbit hole that will never end if we do that. But places like Molly's Coffee Shop in Fredericton, Queen Street, right? And then, you know, like that was sort of like where the all ages, but that and TNB, right? There was like the skater kids. And then right sort of down there was sort of like the neutral grounds, like the kind of arts weirdy, you know, people kind of were down in Molly's. And then, you know, the just kind of more normal middle class skateboard kids were kind of down at TMB. But then kind of Officer Square was kind of the middle ground, right? And so, again, this is just kind of contextualizing, you know, like, you know, you go to Officer Square, you smoke a joint, you play some hacky sack. You know, God help me, I went through a wretched phase where I was fucking dragging a set of bongos around for about a fucking year.
I do remember your bongos.
Oh, my Lord. Oh, my Lord. And I got into this whole diatribe about that with somebody from the day, you know, when I met in Vancouver. You know, so anyway, there's so many rabbit holes we can go down here. So I don't even know what we're going to get through for these lists.
Yeah.
I think, you know, this is where the show notes are going to come in very handy. I guess I would just say, anything that we talk about in terms of people, characters, personalities is met with love and respect, okay?
Exactly. Love, respect, no incrimination.
None of the sort. I'm not going to throw anybody by name under the bus, and I would hope that if you're watching this or catching it, you know, even if it's years later from now, you understand that this is a very you know, we're just two older guys kind of looking back on the day. And in this case, our day, you know, everything that we've kind of done since, I think, has been informed by what we got into on the indie and punk and DIY scene in Atlantic Canada, you know, for upwards of 10 years, you know, before perhaps going out into doing other endeavors. So I guess, you know, the academic in me just kind of wants to kind of put some parameters on this, you know. So sorry for the digression there, dude. Who's the first on your list, man? I'm so freaking curious.
I'm actually, please. Since the reason that I said Atlantic Province music from Atlantic Canada is because I guess I've spent more of my time living out here when it comes down to it. But in different parts of the region. And I wanted to include Atlantic Canada because I'm kind of combining two of my picks, because two of my picks are basically three, you know, sort of the first few years of the new millennium of St. John's Newfoundland music. From the time that when I was living up there, specifically the two bands I wanted to talk about are The Killing and Genius.
I've never heard of either of them. Please explain in detail about all of them.
I find, I was thinking about it, that like, I feel like the era, because like, the time of like, say, like right around 2000 to 2000, even like 2004, 2005.
Yep.
It's a lot of stuff isn't as well documented then.
How old are you when you're encountering this music?
I'm probably like, I guess I moved there in 2001, so I would have been 25.
How long were you there?
I was there from 2001 till the end of 2003.
Were you working shitty jobs, or did you have like a stable situation?
I had a couple of different jobs. Well, here's the thing.
No judgment. I'm just saying.
Yeah,
like,
I had a couple. I had a bit of an arc when I was living in St. John's, but for a while I worked at a junior high school running community engagement programs with the kids, basically taking kids to volunteer projects. But like, it ended up being the thing that like a lot of like young weird kids who ended up being like really active in like. Like, one of the kids who used to volunteer for that has, like, sings in, like, a hardcore band in Chicago now. And, like, you know, all these other kids have just that were, like, involved with these volunteer programs. It was just, like, we'll take some kids to go walk dogs at the SPCA. Or, like, go, like, help out some kids at the elementary school up the hill.
Man, that sounds like
stuff.
Incredibly
and that
rewarding
kind of thing.
Work,
but it was,
actually,
like, one of these government grant programs where you had to – they basically slid a list across the table to me.
We
like,
are middle-class people.
But it was just like,
show, okay?
These are all ways you could possibly be considered a youth at a disadvantage. Here's a pencil.
You are the advantage.
You can check these. And at the time, I was
disadvantaged. You, I got
the thing is though. Okay. At the time, this was very much in my like dirtbag traveling punk phase. So you know,
I'm gonna go back to that when I'm 60. Except I'm gonna call myself a hobo. But anyway.
But yeah, this was very much in that era of the like, you know, the like worshiping Aaron Comet bus a little too much era that I wrote about in the notes of one of the previous episodes. Living that vagabond punk rock life, I guess. Like I hitchhiked to St. John's to visit a friend of mine from when I lived in Calgary who was from there.
And then
there.
You stay for a bunch of years, one of those?
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Well, I lost all my stuff on the way. Thought I had nothing but what I carried in my pockets. A week later, a nice man showed up at my friend's dad's house because it was the only address in Newfoundland in my address book. Because when I'd write letters to him back in the day, I'd just send them to his dad's place and his dad would send them to wherever he was. And so the guy just showed up at my friend's dad's house and was like, I found this backpack in the woods or, you know, out behind this truck stop because I'd left it kind of behind this gas station that was really sort of cramped inside to try and go use the washroom to stop while I was
checking. We're getting oddly specific here,
Dan.
I appreciate the detail,
it was like,
dude.
Basically, like, I'm a big dude. It was a small place. It was like
I get
a cramped little gas station.
I'm
I was
also
like,
a big
I got to leave my
know,
stuff
I
outside.
Yeah.
So I left my stuff outside. And while I was in the washroom, someone pulled up and they're like, oh, no, a bag fell off the roof of someone's car. I better take it with me and I'll find where they live and I'll take it to their house or I'll
and
mail
it
to them.
Never happened.
Yeah. Oh, no. They dropped it off at my friend's dad's house a week later
oh,
with all these
shit.
Letters about, like, you need
there
Jesus. I looked at your journals. Like, you know, you need, here's my church's address.
Did you ever make contact with the church?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Okay,
I was just like,
you might
these
have,
people
anyway.
Are, it was, they came on a little intense in the, like, letters that they left for, like, to the person who owns these possessions that I'm returning
Saint to Paul
this address.
Saint Paul and the apostles
exactly.
were intense in the day, sir,
but
I will have you know, but anyway,
basically,
yeah.
I showed up there, panicked, found a place to stay long enough to get a job,
right.
And then kept that job long enough to get a different job kind of thing,
right.
Ended up staying for a couple years. Played in a couple bands while I was up there as well.
No children from that period that you're aware
no,
of.
No, 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 no.
Well done, well
but,
done. No extra
anyways,
lines from that period.
I,
angry? No. Okay.
No.
Good,
no.
Good.
No.
Well done.
But,
I mean, that's better than some of us do. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, that's that from that period. I'm saying.
Yeah.
There are other eras in my life.
True that. Okay, Dan. I respect
one.
All of this. This is a really big windup for two bands I've never heard of. So tell me
okay,
about
yeah,
your band.
Sorry about that. We got sidetracked.
That's okay. No, it's
awesome. But anyways, when I got to St. John's, it happened to be right around the time that this whole new era of their scene was kind of taking off.
I have no idea
and
about the Newfoundland scene. Even
that's
kid.
The thing.
So,
but it's been going since, like, there have been bands, like, well, at least the 70s.
Before Confederation, okay, you know,
1930. I think in, well, they had one of the earliest Canadian, like, punk full-length releases was from a band in Newfoundland called The Slime in, like, 1978, who all those guys got
I'm
old and became professors
right
at Memorial
now,
University, or, like, most
real,
of them
man.
Did.
Okay.
And, But like,
I tracked a Discog reference for this, but anyway.
Oh, I'll play some YouTube. I'll have some YouTube links for some of their songs too.
This is legit real stuff that Dan's talking
legit
about.
Legit real stuff. Real album. Real musicians.
I've never heard of it in my life, but okay.
Actually, some of the guys in that band ended up being profs in the music department at Memorial University later on in life.
Midlife punks end up at universities,
yeah,
man.
Exactly. But like, yeah. Anyways, that's. Like, this is just to say that St. John's has had some degree of a music scene. It's always been,
course,
like, you know,
of
a
course,
couple of
man.
Cool bands.
Yeah,
like,
in terms,
there
in
were
terms
a couple
of punk
cool,
music.
Exactly.
Right.
There were, like, not all a just, couple of, like, yeah. hardcore bands there in the 80s that turned into the grunge bands of the 90s and that sort of thing. But around 2000,
is hardship
once, like,
from
internet
Newfoundland?
File sharing became a little more of a thing.
Sorry, dude, just a random question. Is Hardship Post from Newfoundland?
Yes, they are.
Shit, okay, I do know one band from Newfoundland.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Hardship Post.
They came to Fredericton and played the market a couple of times, actually.
That's right. I haven't even seen that. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So like, there was always some degree of, like, at least, like, an alternative scene or something.
Yeah.
But, like, when I moved there in around, like, 2001, it was right around the time that, like, a really, like, heavy hardcore scene had first taken off in Newfoundland.
Oh!
And a lot of that, you can say, was a mix of, like, internet file sharing and then just people that end up moving there for reasons who are into like certain kinds of music who meet, like, that was the situation with The Killing. Was
you,
around 2000, a guy named Dave Monroe, who was a tattoo artist from Toronto, who was like roommates with a bunch of people in like the music scene out there, moves to St. John's, you know, meets some of the locals, and they're like, oh wow, you're from Toronto, do you know this band Left 4 Dead? I just downloaded a bunch of their songs, I think they're great. You know, there's this, who they were like a pretty popular hardcore band from like Southern Ontario in the mid 90s. And Dave was like, oh yeah, that was my roommate's band. Like, great, let's start playing some music. So there was a Halloween cover show coming up soon. So they're like, let's start a Misfits cover band. What are we going to call it? I don't know, The Killing. So they decided to do a Misfits cover set at first. It goes off well, people enjoy it. And like, let's just start our own band. But like, it was the first time St. John's really had like a heavy, like fast, heavy, angry sort of
with
political hardcore band.
I think what you're getting here is like a contemporary hardcore,
yes,
punk.
Yes, something very contemporary, but like very, so like, heavily, know, like, drawing from, yeah, like a niche band from 5 years ago from a specific region that somebody had downloaded that it just happened like. That guy's roommate that was in that band moved to St. John's and like, let's just do this.
I do like how you cast the net out here with your narrative.
Yes.
And I do appreciate how these sort of random, sort of almost, you know, like serendipitous kind of just, well, I'm just typing something on my keyboard and then 3 years later I'm in a band. What the fuck, right?
Yeah, exactly. But like, they really, it wasn't, they were a band that experienced some, you kind of had to experience live because they would do things like set off fireworks indoors in like, you know, little metal drums on stage. And like Dave, who their singer was about 6'4" was, and like pretty muscular at the time, would do like cartwheels into the crowd and that sort of thing while singing. And they went
bread and circuses, bread and circuses.
And like every year they would do a big Halloween show at a venue that they didn't plan on using ever again.
Oh.
Because
convenient of them to do that.
They would go, most of the members of the band were vegan. So they would make animal product free fake blood balloons to throw on the crowd while they were playing.
I respect the creativity
build, like,
behind that.
Yeah,
very much.
Like they would, like one Halloween set I saw them do, they had like big cardboard coffins that like dancers would jump out of and like spray people with like.
It sounds like Cirque du Soleil kind of shit, man.
And like just like costumes, a lot of theatrics, that sort of thing. But like,
okay,
just
so the Newfoundland people are very expressive. In case anyone in case you've never met a person from Newfoundland, which somehow that's possible, I've worked with a complement of excellent professional people in the Middle East who are like 50% from Newfoundland out of 100, you know, like, so we're talking dozens of people. And some of them I'm still in touch with. And, you know, I never went to a kitchen party, a Newfoundland kitchen party, until I lived in the Middle East. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, and we were just like, so, like, I know how clannish, and I know how much these people value music, and I know how much they bring to the table in terms of passion and expression and intensity. And it's a gift to the friggin' world, which the world doesn't realize that they deserve, you know, or not. But so everything you're describing sounds awesome, Dan. Is there recorded output from these bands?
Yes,
or
there
what?
Is. They have one. They did one recording. It's on Bandcamp. It's called "You Can Make Music, We're Gonna Make War."
I love Bandcamp, and I love that title. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were just. But the thing is, though, it's like once they started going, that whole crop of, like, they started playing a lot of all ages shows, and all those kids that saw them in 2000 by 2001 were starting to start bands.
Yep.
And like, not just starting bands that sounded like them, but like looking into, you know, just because the internet was becoming more of a thing, just like
the internet was being more of a thing.
You know, children,
people who are under like 35, there was a point in the universe, in the history of human consciousness, where the internet was just becoming a thing.
But like,
okay, just FYI,
While the Killing were playing their first few shows out in the suburbs of St. John's around Conception Bay South, there was this weird little group of dudes that were like friends with the hardcore kids, but not entirely into that. Just like the weird stoners that hung out.
I love the specificity that you're going into here with these.
But here's the thing, it's like, there's like this little pocket of guys. That's the thing with St. John's, it's like, the scene there, it's like there's people into whatever sort of bands you'd be into, you might be interested in, but there's five of those people. But those five people have three bands between the five people of different combinations.
And
that's how the scene there goes. Like, I would go to shows.
Knows how to play drums, knows
yeah,
how to,
exactly.
You know,
like,
dead,
the person who plays
right?
drums
yeah,
plays
yeah,
drums
okay.
in every band.
That's it.
Yeah, like, I would go to shows where there'd be six local bands made up of eight people. And then, like, different person would come in here and there. But, like, while this is all happening, there's this other little crew of kids that are getting into, like, Scratch Acid and, like,
love them already.
Like,
I want to wrap my arms around these
and,
people.
Like,
give me
just
David
out in the suburbs.
Give me David Williams
and,
Sims.
And they start this band called Genius. That I got to see their first show in front of like a downtown crowd, and they were like a last minute replacement band on this show, and it was like this little chubby kid who had like sort of mid-90s Weird Al hair and general Weird Al-ish fashion sensibilities, a guy who could be 25 or 12 because he's very short and has adult braces,
or 30
bass,
honestly,
and then just like a drummer who looks like he's too cool to be hanging out with the rest of them. And
that's
then
always the drummer, man.
All of a sudden, it's just this massive wall of noise that sounds like it should be on like Amphetamine Reptile Records in like 1992, coming out of these like suburban, like just.
Did you just make a Poison Idea reference? Is that what you're getting out there, dude?
I was making more of like a Jesus Lizard kind of reference.
Fucking A,
like,
right. Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
And it's like
thank
their music
you.
Is like,
yeah.
It's like a mix of like. Kind
so you're
of
saying this is Newfoundland's version of the Jesus Lizard. Is that what you're saying, dude?
Well, it's partially that. It's like take sort of the Jesus Lizard and like the bands that Steve Albini actually played in as well as record. You
I
know,
fucking
not just recorded,
love Steve Albini so
and
much.
Like, but like bookend it with or take like the bookends of Nirvana's career. Sort of take Bleach on one end and more like the In Utero kind of.
I love how
like
much
when they were getting this, like take those kind of sounds and make a sandwich.
I love how much
and that's
thought you're putting into a band that,
and,
that 50 people have heard of, including you.
Well, here's
I love that.
That's
okay?
the thing. That's one of the problems because it's like this is music that's like it's like the Killing did one tour through the U.S. I don't think they even stopped in the Maritimes. They just went straight to the U.S. and toured around New England and upstate
Good
New
call.
York. Band called Ruination from Toronto that was like kind of a of screwed up leather.
Hey, dude.
That's gone. Yeah.
You were just gone for a second on my screen.
Yeah,
so,
you just went blank on my screen for a second.
Well, I don't think that was bad enough a glitch to have to edit it out, but we can totally do. But what I would suggest is if you just want to go back on what you were saying.
Okay.
Yeah. Just can you rewind about 2 seconds?
I was going to rewind about 2 seconds And anyways, like I said, The Killing did one tour through the Northeastern U.S. with this band Ruination, kind of a supergroup. Members of, there's like the drummer from Los Crudos and like the bass player from Anti-Flag for a while. And like a guy that was in Fucked Up for a bit was in it too. And just like some folks in like that era of the scene. Then like, but it was around the same time that like people, it, recording still, like Newfoundland's one of those areas, you know, there was a time when recording was difficult for a lot of local bands, or like getting good recordings and releasing good recordings.
Before Garage Band, is that what you're saying, Dan?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So a lot of this stuff, like Genius have two albums. One of them you can find on YouTube. The other, they're still going as of the last couple of years. And they put out like one album in 2004 and one album in 2018. And the 2018 album you can get on Bandcamp. But like, they're just, I've never felt more in danger of like a venue's floor collapsing than like the dance floor at like one of the Genius shows that I went to when I lived in St. John's. Like,
you,
and they're
the kind
of band
that. Tried that before, that kind of thing. Yeah. That's,
yeah. Like, and they're like,
the floor
like,
sinking in beneath.
They were the
you.
Kind of band that they were able to sort of cross over. The like people that were into like, it's like, any kind of like sort of alternative rock would hear them and be like, hey, I think I can get into some aspect of that. So they had a little more, yeah, I won't say crossover appeal because their music is very abrasive and like kind of noodly and proggy and at part.
I love it.
And yeah, I've got links to a couple of tracks there, and through those you can get to playlists that have like all their stuff basically. There's a YouTube channel called Heavy Newfoundland that has hosts a lot of their stuff and a lot of
that
just,
would
like,
be a heavy channel. You're talking about
there's a lot of stuff there. There's a lot of stuff there.
I'm sure.
I'm not that familiar with. There's plenty that I'm not familiar with. Just been a few years since I've gotten to touch with a lot of it. But anyways, yeah, it's like right around that time there was this really amazing this era of the scene. Yeah, the scene in that area just sort of seemed to go through a little bit of a rebirth with a lot of and like, but it was at a time where it was like recording was kind of difficult. And a lot of, these bands, it's like if they put something out, it was like a couple years later. Because it was like, even just like that many, like 2 or 3 years later, it was easier to, fire up GarageBand and through, you know, get a demo tape together. And like it was getting easier to, like there were more places to like host free music on the internet other than like, you know, or I guess eventually even, I guess MySpace and that sort of thing. But like
MySpace,
I know. Which
I
seems
know.
Like forever.
But really,
eons
a lot
ago.
Of people
but
went
still,
all
that was a way that a lot of music
MySpace.
Got out. But it was like this was just. Anyways, yeah, I feel like I've been rambling a lot about a very niche topic. So I'm gonna back away for a bit.
That was dope. So first of all, Dan, let me say as always, I appreciate your I appreciate your dovetailing your lived personal experience with some recollection of some very specific personalities and situations, but you do it in such a way that sort of like, you know, I may have been doing my thing, you know, back in, say, Alberta. I mean, I haven't spent much time in Alberta, but just hypothetically, you know, it's sort of, you know, there's a relatability within the specifics of what you described, and I really appreciate that, dude. And the way that you described it made me interested in it, so.
Yeah. And I'll say that was my one that's the most niche like that.
Niche is fine. Niche is fine. It's like if there's a band that, you know, only like 100 people have heard of or, you know, maybe a few or more. But then, I mean, that really is like part of the mission of this show. Not that this show has a mission, but I mean, like, yeah, man, maybe by the end of the run of this podcast, we'll have maybe 30 more people listening to it or something, you know? So that's awesome, man.
Well, one thing I remember, another thing that's just a tie-in to a band that may get mentioned later, I don't know.
Sure.
The one time that The Killing played Halifax Pop Explosion, guess who they shared a bill with?
I do not know.
Fredrickson's 283.
Fucking shit! I wondered if we were going to get through this show without mentioning that.
When 283 played the Pavilion.
Mark, Andrew, and Tripp, your contribution has been noted, and you deserve more than what you got in terms of popularity. I'll just say that now. But anyway, That's a friggin' nice time, man. That's a friggin' nice.
I feel like I've rambled a lot right now, so I'm gonna. Oh no, man!
I mean, listen. This is a free format show.
Yeah.
And honestly, given the personalities involved and given topics, I'm just gonna arbitrarily make a decision that this is gonna be our special hour and a half long episode, dude. So don't even worry about
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
You know, because this is something that's close to our hearts, and honestly, I'm grateful to Dan as well. Because, like, I've got my Maritimes, at least as far as his list, includes New Brunswick and a little bit of Nova Scotia. So I'm like, thank you for bringing in Newfoundland into the equation, dude.
Who picks are New Brunswick and Nova Scotia, folks?
Can I just ask, man, please tell me you have somebody on your list from PEI.
Yeah.
Fucking A, right. Okay,
I will give a shout out in case I don't know. There's a slight chance they would have at least seen it. The members, there's a new band, a new kind of like punk rock band in Charlottetown called Cell Death.
Are they really good?
Who are folks that have been around for, they're, you know, our age cohort. Some of the story, their singer, like, has been around forever in like the scenes in different parts of the Maritimes. Like, and, you know, she's a great person. And has been in a bunch of cool bands. Yeah, it was in a really big, cool band called Uncle for a long time. That was a two piece. And the other half of Uncle, Matt, who's also her husband, plays in Cell Death as well. And they just put out a demo tape. You can find it on Bandcamp on Suicide Records. That's the one thing I know that's going on in Charlottetown.
Suicide Records? Is that the name of that?
Suicide Records. SEWERCIDE. Side Records, which is run by a guy named Davis Brown, who may possibly watch this at some point. I don't know.
I hope you do. All of you indie people, we just want to give you
Davis
a
puts
hug.
Out great
We just want to give you a hug
Suicide.
For doing all this shit. Thank you.
I'm going to talk about another Suicide band later.
Are we really, Dan? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. This is a tribute
to one of the stalwarts of the Halifax scene of the past two decades.
You used to use the word stalwart. I hope it earns its keep. Who are you talking about there, dude?
I was going to talk about. Halifax's Bougie Boys, who are one of the many bands of a guy named Cody Gugu, who has been. I think the first
is that his real name? That can't be.
Yes, that is his real name.
Okay, fine. Sorry, Cody. But, I thought it might not be a real name,
That is Cody's actual government name, to my knowledge. When you look Cody up on Discogs, he has there are at least 20 bands listed for Cody. And I can think of at least half a dozen that they missed.
I'm serious.
One of whom played their first show last night. Because the guy just never stops working.
I'm telling you, we're like up to the minute on this show. It's like, we know what you played last week.
Girlfriend was actually invited to go to a show the other night that this guy, his latest project is playing.
Well done, Cody. And Dan's girlfriend.
But yeah, anyways.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's... I don't know. If you... Should I just keep going?
You may as well, man. I mean, honestly, we're kind of improvising on the format here a little bit today, folks. So, by all means.
Sorry.
No, man, it's dope. I mean, you don't need to apologize. This is like, this is the nature of a maritime conversation, my man.
Yeah. Since Suicide Records came up, they released one of the...
Suicide Records. I'm still blowing my gasket over that.
Well, the thing is, the guy that runs the record label, Dave, used to play in the band Career Suicide from Toronto.
I love all of you indie people so much without knowing anything about you. Career Suicide. Thank you for describing my year. You know, person from Toronto I've never met. Thank you, dude.
I'll make this one quick. Anyways, this guy Cody, like I said, he's been in over 24 bands over the past 18 years or so in the Halifax scene. He's just been working nonstop. Bougie Boys is one of my favorites of his. It was one of his collaborations with another guy, Steve Earle, who's not that Steve Earle. but who he had previously played in a pretty good band called Alienation with. But anyways, they're kind of like, it's a mix of like kind of melodic punk and almost, I don't want to say psychedelic, but kind of psychedelic.
They put
a lot of like weird watery effects on the vocals. And it was the first time a lot of the people involved
did acid?
Got more sort of projects.
Okay.
Possibly.
Over
the span of like 2017 to 2019, they released 3 LPs. One at the start of February 2017, one on Christmas 2017, one middle of 2019. They're all available on streaming services, etc. They're just probably one of my favorite Halifax bands of the past few years. And like I said, the guy doesn't stop working. He's always in different bands. He's in, I think, 2 bands with Chris from Eric's Trip now.
Speaking of a guy who never stops working.
Exactly.
Probably.
Yeah. So anyways, I'll just sort of append that one, and let's turn things over to you.
Oh, yeah, man. No, listen, I appreciate it. And honestly, dude, I appreciate you putting up with me kind of barging in on all your things there. But honestly, I have to say, everything, like, this is like, you know, when I seek out, you know, people to work with, I'm like, what can I, you know, get into here that I've never encountered before, but still within kind of a familiar context?
Yeah.
So, like, when I'm talking about my education stuff on the other podcast, you know, that's kind of the benefit of having somebody like Doug around, you know, and similarly here, I get to have the benefit of somebody with Dan's pretty encyclopedic knowledge of really, you know, the indie and punk scenes within our community that we all came from, that, you know, Dan and I both came from, and lots of people who I think would listen to this show. So I appreciate that a lot, man. So, I mean, I'm just going to say, again, I appreciate that you are going as kind of indie with your stuff as you are, because I'm just like, you know, my shit, you know, the things that I immediately relate to, on the one hand, I can mention Joel Plaskett out here in BC and people are like, oh, I don't know who the fuck that is. But, if I'm just sort of talking to the general demographic who might check the show, I'm like, that's the most mainstream guy in the world. And so I'm going to sort of say, bridging the spectrum here, as somebody friggin' wearing a Black Flag shirt that I legit ordered from SST Records, along with about 9 pounds of vinyl, you know, and reading like the biography of Circle Jerks Keith Morris. So, I mean, I'm not saying I have punk credentials, but what I'm saying is I am deeply involved in hard music. And I understand, you know, why somebody at the outset may go, man, that's some really polished, slick pop product when they look at somebody like Joel. But I'm going to say now, I see Joel as like, literally, like, you know, it's like the dude put out. So first of all, Joel, if you're listening, which I'm sure you won't, much respect, because you have been committed to it since you jumped in. You jumped in with Thrush Hermit, both feet. And, you know, people are like, yeah, they were privileged. They were middle class. Their parents gave them their instruments. Like, fuck off. My parents gave me lots of things that I am grateful for at a young age. I didn't get a contract with an indie label, but I'm not going to shit on somebody who's more successful than me, you know, just out of fucking general, like, you know, like, and that's something, man, like, I think the Maritimers generally, you know, as a people, we kind of get away with just kind of like, we celebrate each other, I think, generally, because we know how tough it is. But a lot of people are just like, fuck you for your success. You know, the moment you stop playing a dive bar in front of 6 people, you're a fucking sellout. Well, fuck that nonsense entirely. I'm just going to say. So, and I think that speaks to actually some of the bands that, you know, I've got on my list for later on. So I'm just going to start with the most obvious. Joel, you're fucking dope. And, you know, it's just, you know, you're talking about relatability. And it's just like, he's a middle class nerd from fucking, you know, Dartmouth and shit. And I'm just like, I'm a middle class nerd. I fucking know what it's like to be called talented at a certain age and just kind of like, I'm going to ride my fucking wave and just kind of do, you know, my thing within my ability. His turned into a band that a lot of people gravitated towards, i.e. Thrush Hermit. I never really gave him much time. I mean, I still don't. I don't think I could even name more than, I don't think I could name a single Thrush Hermit song. But the guy put himself out there. He went on tour. Speaking of Steve Albini, they actually recorded an album with Steve Albini. So imagine you're 17 or 18 years old and you're like recording an album with Steve Albini. Okay. Like, it doesn't even matter if it's a good record. I mean, that would friggin' blow your mind, right? So he's been at that level of the entertainment industry at a very young age, and more power to him. And I'll just say again, in terms of what I like about his music, I mean, he's fiercely independent. He's committed to his own thing. I mean, he's got a record label. He's got a record store. He's got like an emporium out there in Dartmouth.
Yeah, New Scotland Yard.
It's
like he's, record he's store, like, cafe. You know, I think there's a recording
studio. I've never been there. If I go out to the East Coast
there, you got to stop by.
I'm just saying.
It's just in downtown Dartmouth.
He's committed to the local community.
Oh, yeah.
And
he's
just
around, you know?
He's around, and he's always been around. And you know exactly. how many musicians, like, get, like, you know, $10,000 a year or something because they play fiddle on as one of his records or something? I mean, his records bring in so many friggin' people across so many different genres. It's just like, yeah, he's a cool dude. I like him. He's always been around, and I want to play on his records. So I guess I'm not necessarily even speaking to much how much the music speaks to me, but I'm just saying as like a 44-year-old dude looking at a 48-year-old dude going, man, you're doing right by the local community.
Yeah.
You're putting out viable art. Nobody fucking tells you what to do. It seems you tour when you want to. You put out virtual product. It seems like, you know, it's like he did like this whole series of, you know, during the quarantine of like some virtual shows, which led to them re-releasing Down at the Khyber, you know, re-recorded by the same guys who did it, except 20 years later on the original lineup. So, I mean, just the notion to do that. So I'm just going to say, Joel, much respect. I bought his four, you know, his like quadruple record thing. And it's like, there's probably 12 songs on it that I really enjoy, but I'll just throw it on and just be like, you know, my kids will just be sitting there, you know, in the background playing the video game. And I'm like, this is as good as a representation of modern, cool, contemporary indie shit from Atlantic Canada that I could possibly want to have. And again, the music speaks to me in a lot of ways, which I'll probably say for the notes. I'll bring in Sloan here because I've got less to say about Sloan. I've got a lot less to say about Sloan. I got a Sloan t-shirt. I think they're dope. I don't know if you could have Thrush Hermit. And I don't know if like, okay, Sloan again. Maybe you know more about Murder Records than I do, Dan. How much do you know about Murder Records?
I know it was their record label in Halifax for a while. They put out some of like Buck 65's early stuff amongst other
fucking A. Shout out to Buck 65. I know you're a radio guy now, but
if you ever get a chance to check out Piggy the Calypso Orchestra of the Maritimes, they put out some of their stuff. Piggy are pretty great. They're like active North End folks playing like cool music with like xylophones and a horn section and that kind of stuff. They had a couple records on Murder. They had a couple things on Murder Records as well. And I think it was an Eric's Trip record on there too.
Yeah, and I think Thrush Hermit actually a couple of their records ended up putting it out there. So I guess during this weird, crazy, chaotic kind of mid-90s time when, you know, Sub Pop came to the region, signed Eric's Trip as the first Canadian band, you know, on their label. And, you know, it just seemed like if you were a teenager and you were kind of around that maybe, I mean, before the internet largely took off, this is something where you felt like you were finally sort of could participate in something that the wider culture you know, was finding cool in a way that was actually cool and, you know, authentic. So I guess it's just, and only in terms of Sloan, I'm saying I've come to appreciate Sloan as musicians way more within the past couple of years. I'd say since I have 40, yeah. I've enjoyed the shit out of them. I have records from them coming in the mail, and I'm just like, man, these guys have just been delivering pure pop mastery at such a consistent level. You just take it for granted. You're like, it's not stuff that I would normally listen to. It's like, it's too nice. It's too sweet sounding, but it still drives me in. And I'm hapless to explain it, honestly. I think probably their A-Sides Win, their greatest hits thing from like the mid-aughts that they put out to kind of summarize the first 15 years of their career. I mean, that's friggin', you're talking about a record of hits. That is a friggin' record that just, you may as well, you know, call it a day after that. So, again, this is 44-year-old Matt maybe taking stuff from that maybe 20-year-old Matt would not have dug as much at the time, right? You know, being aware of it and respecting it at the time is quite different from appreciating it now. So, Dan, I'm going to turn the mic over to you. I covered my two, and you covered two. So why don't we just why don't we keep it rolling, man?
All right. Yeah, I was next was going to talk about actually, and I know it seems like I tend to tie a lot of picks to sort of a time and place, but Moncton sort of in the mid 2010s. The middle part of the last decade, whatever you want to call it. There ended up a venue started called Clothes House. And what it was one of the folks who used to play in the band Syntax Error from Moncton in the 80s.
Okay.
Who was in a couple of bands in the 90s, who was like a local restaurateur at that point, bought like a house in a shitty neighborhood and was just like, hey, you bands, you need a place to practice? There you go. Get some people to get, pay me rent, and you know, you guys just like take care of it, please, the punks. And thus Clothes House was born. And like a music fest, an annual music festival that ran for a few years called No Funswick Fest, ended up starting out of there, and like other venues around Moncton, like the Esquire Tavern, that was like a big venue in the 90s, started doing shows again for a bit. And like, you know, a lot of out-of-town bands would come through from like that Needles and Pins, who were one of the picks that I had from the West Coast episode. Yeah. Like, they came out, I found out about them because they came out and played that festival one year. Cool. One of the main local bands that came out of that whole scene was a man called the Phone Jerks. It was a mix of, like, a couple from Cape Breton who'd moved to Moncton, Tyler and Emily. Tyler also performed.
Hope you're doing well wherever you are, Tyler and Emily.
Who found this dude from New Jersey who'd found his way to Moncton somehow, named Brian. and they all love classic rock.
Some dude from New Jersey. Yeah
exactly. It's just one of those things that some guy from New Jersey washes up in Moncton somehow, and you know, he loves garage rock. And he finds,
of course,
like garage rock. And they start this band. And yeah, it's got like I said, really heavily into like the 60s, 70s. Woo.
I'm here. Are you here?
I think I will. I'm here.
Yeah. So anyways, I guess
I think we're back.
Yeah, I think we are too. I may actually chop 10 seconds of that. So
that's okay.
So maybe let's just dial it back to Tyler and Emily.
Yeah, Tyler and Emily. Tyler had previously played in a band called the Teenage Hurricanes.
Okay.
Pretty wild, and yeah, they met this dude Brian, who had previously been Killers, who had a few records.
Okay, dude. We seem to have a troublesome connection here.
All right. You're back again?
Yeah. Okay. So I think at this point, you know, we're within the Camtasia.
Do you want to reconnect?
Yeah.
Let's maybe just try this another time.
We'll try this another time, or
like, or do you want to just dial it back and keep going, or
my preference my preference would be at this point, I'm going to just say we're going to cut about a minute here out of the out of whatever this is.
Sure.
So I would prefer to keep going rather than
let's just keep going. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So yeah, I'll dial it back about.
Tyler and Emily.
Okay. Anyways, so yeah, this it just so happens. Well, this sort of scene is picking up in Moncton. We've got, you know, a couple folks move there from Cape Breton, connect with a guy from New Jersey who'd been in some bands in like, you know, late '90s, early 2000s in the States. I had a couple of records, a band called the Valentine Killers. They were pretty good.
Title.
Yeah. Some of the other members of this band, the Phone Jerks, was a band.
You mentioned them a few minutes ago.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yep.
That was the name of the band, Phone Jerks, that they started.
Right.
And yeah, like some of their other bands were, like I said, Impulse Items, and Tyler had been in a band in Cape Breton called the Teenage Hurricanes for a while and was kind of a notorious troll on the Halifax Locals message board when that was in existence. He had a character who was a diehard Nickelback fan that liked to fight with people. but anyways, they kind of became like, you know, of all these bands, sort of the local bands that came up around this like No Funswick Festival type scene around Claude's house, they were the ones that kind of, you know, I guess, yeah, kind of the best of the bunch, in my opinion.
Can I just ask a quick question about No Funswick, because I've been living other places for so long. How many years did it run, and is there any chance it will run again?
It ran, I think, for about 4 years.
Okay.
The person that was organizing it ended up moving to Texas for a while.
Oh. Okay.
And has just is back in Moncton now, but I think is working on some other projects like outside of music that are pretty, I think, taking up a lot of their time. So,
okay.
I don't know if that festival will come back, but it was like, you know, it went for like, you know, a nice little part of like the 2010s. And it was like a multi-night music festival around Moncton, where you'd get like, you know, shows at like two or three different venues around town, and there'd be like afternoon barbecues at this jam space, Clothes House. And yeah, you get a lot of, yeah, just like, you know, top quality, sort of more like the pop punkish end of bands from around Canada and that would come out for it. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. Out of Controller from Halifax played every year. They were pretty great.
There's a series of festivals. There's a festival I think is still going that's kind of started up recently. 506 you know, Area 506.
Yeah,
that's down St. John.
I've seen
stuff from them, and I've actually had, I even had an Area 506 t-shirt at one point because I like the graphic. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, this kind of speaks to the notion, I think, of the Maritimes kind of punching above their weight in terms of, you know, what they can, of what we, you know, have brought to the table. And it's just like, yeah, some random guy from New Jersey ends up in Moncton. And then, you know, a band gets started, and then all the various personal and, you know, financial spinoffs and cultural spinoffs that happen from that. It's just sort of like, that's kind of, one of the stereotypes, I think, about the Atlantic Canadian region that kind of rings true a bit. You know, people sometimes just show up and then kind of improvise as they go, and it ends up being something kind of unique and special. So I think that's what you were really touching on there with a lot of your stuff, Dan.
It's like heavily like 60s, 70s, you know, 60s garage rock influence, but like, you know, it's folks of sort of our age cohort in the band.
Yeah.
And, you know, the lyrics are pretty, really, you know, the song's about having to work a couple of jobs sometimes. Or like, you know, there's a song that like one of the folks wrote about like one of their kids on their 10x10 10 inch EP, which is definitely worth checking out.
Love a 10 inch EP.
It's perfect. I've got a copy of it on the shelf over there across the room from me. And it's also, like I said, on streaming services and stuff. So but yeah, it's like cool garage, but you know, it's folks. It's relatable to sort of folks that could be a little bit older, but still like to have fun. And, but, you know, deal with life stuff sometimes, I guess you could say.
My fun. And yeah, a
couple of records worth checking out for sure.
Well, my fun, I realize now, resembles no one else's fun except for like other older people who listen to heavy music.
Exactly.
I'm realizing that. I'm like, when my kids, honestly, you know, have been telling me to turn down my punk music since before they were 5 years old.
Yeah.
You know, so this is kind of the, like, and it's like, my kids aren't even especially conservative in their taste. They're just like, Dad, this is an unacceptable volume. And I'm like, this is just how I roll, baby, you know? So, again, I don't think I would be that kind of person or that kind of parent if it wasn't for some of these earlier experiences, right?
Exactly.
Okay. So I think now I'll just, you know, we're talking about we're doing a special hour and a half or longer episode because this is called Today New Brunswick, Tomorrow the World. Am I right? I was wondering where I caught. I caught the title from this. I caught titles. I steal things and then I don't realize I've done it. I was like, where the frig did I get that from? I threw on the first Ramones record yesterday for the first time in a while. Today Your Love, Tomorrow the World.
Exactly.
I'm like, I had no idea.
You were doing, and I was like, I appreciate the reference. I'm into it. Let's use it as the title. Let's go.
It was a reference that I didn't realize the reference. I was like, that sounds like a good catchphrase. I think I'm going to, you know, run with that. So, so we're talking about personal connections to music, which is really what this whole show is about. Ours and other people's connection to music. And I'm going to speak now to a couple of Fredericton bands to me, you know, it's like, you know, we're talking about like, you know, you're talking about like 283 and, you know, we're just like, I know who was in that and all this. And like, we're really not going to like start bringing up specific names, you know, really as much, you know, we probably will, but it's not the point of the show. We're not trying to like annotate the scene.
Yeah.
But I'll just say, you know, in terms of people that I hung out with and were just like cool dudes. Okay, so I've known Jeremy, the singer from Rockin' Argentos, since I was in middle school. And it was just one of those things where it's like you're playing basketball with a guy, you're playing video games with a guy in a basement with a bunch of other, you know, smelly middle school kids. And, you know, you're just kind of finding your own way without supervision from your parents. And we kind of just, you know, he's another like, South Park, you know, I keep saying South Park, I mean Southwood. Southwood skyline kind of person. And, you know, he's just a cool guy. He's like, he'd drive me to school, you know, when he got his license and there was no way I was ever getting a driver's license or shit like that. But then, you know, people like kind of, you know, drift out of your life and, you know, it's like, oh, I haven't seen you for 5 years. And it's like, the dude knows how to play guitar. The guy listens to the Misfits a lot and he knows how to play guitar. And there were some other really cool dudes in that band who I'm not even going to try and remember their names specifically. But I'm just going to say shout out to Jeremy, for just being somebody who's been around since I've been in middle school off and on. And like the reason that I'm sort of punching in the band here as like on this priority within my list isn't so much that I was like into their music, which was very good. It actually was very good. But it's like, I met my wife at a Rockin' Argento show. At O'Malley's Bar. At O'Malley's Bar in King's Place.
Seems like something you put on a t-shirt.
It's just like,
I met my wife at a Rockin' Argento show at O'Malley's Bar in King's Place.
I met my Korean wife at, the woman who I had two kids with and I was married for 17 years. Okay, and we're at amicable divorce now. We got amicable divorce. We got two beautiful children. I'm just saying, if I hadn't gotten off fucking Sendant Call Center at Brookside Mall, just needing desperately to get drunk, and listen to some shitty bar music, it's like I wasn't going to O'Malley's to see the Rockin' Argento Society. I'm like, there's a gig. It's drunk. I need to get drunk. I've been answering phones for fucking Avis for, you know, 7 or 8 or 9 hours. And my mind is numb. I need to get myself, you know, where's the loudest music and the most beer with the cheapest cover? That's kind of my trajectory that night. And I won't go into all the whys and wherefores, but You know, I met Mounier. Mounier was like, yeah, in King's Place. I know. And I was like, I'm living in like this shitty apartment on George Street. You know, like that some slumlord is just like, it's a bachelor apartment, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, I guess too. You know, it's the price is right for my call center job and my BA degree that I'm having trouble using. Yeah, I'm going to go get wasted and listen to punk. And that same night, I, you know, met this really sweet woman who didn't have almost any English. But I sent her flowers the next day. We didn't even hang out that night. Within 4 months, we were fucking married. And it's literally a random encounter at fucking O'Malley's bar.
And
a Rockin' Argento show! So I don't think I even mentioned that ever to Jeremy.
Yeah.
Jeremy, if you're seeing this, I'm sorry to kind of throw you onto the bus with some personal shit, you know, but it's just like, it happened. My life is different now in every kind of way just because of one random night in Fredericton at one of the lower bars in Fredericton with a band that I cared about and, you know, was cool, but I wasn't like, I got to listen to them. They mean a lot to me. I'm just like, nah, I'm just like, I'm going to get wasted after the fucking show, you know, after my work. And EI. Okay. Can I?
Just EI.
EI. Oh,
my heart.
So we're going to have significant overlap on the show.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to say, Matt Gay, whatever you're doing, you're one of the fucking coolest people ever. And I love you and respect you. And I'm going to say, Gumby, you're doing awesome with your family. You're keeping it real in Fredericton, and I don't know what you're up to now. Ben McFarlane, Gumby's brother, you're a freaking cool dude who got me into all kinds of records that I fucking still listen to. I wouldn't listen to Leatherface if it wasn't for Gumby's brother. I would not be into Leatherface.
Oh.
And Leatherface is like my favorite band besides the fucking Replacements. So,
yeah.
Drew, okay?
Oh,
Drew Crawford.
Rest
in peace, Drew Crawford. Yeah. One of the fucking nicest, coolest, you know, he contributed so much to so many people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
And as a musician, you know, playing guitar, drinking beer, hanging out with Drew. It was a fucking true privilege.
Oh, for sure.
Anytime you got to hang out with Drew.
Yeah.
And you didn't realize it was a privilege because he's just the funniest fucking dude in the world.
Oh, yeah.
And
he's so
nice. And anyway, so I'm just going to say respect to EI on lots of levels. And this is where it's like musical influence. Like, fine. Fuck musical influence, actually.
Yeah.
You know, it's like these are creative people, you know, with rich, wild lives
mm-hmm.
who like make an effort to make this happen and bring you some fucking entertainment.
Yeah.
And you deserve it, you know. So it's like I'm showing some respect for a couple of bands that meant a lot to me in various ways over that period of time. So again, not to get all Dear Diary and shit, you know, but really, Dan, you know what I mean? It's just it's not just about like, you know, I like the style of music or they were cool dudes. Like I had friggin' meaningful shit in my life that still resonates happening because I just hung out with some of these people. So, So anyways, Dan, I appreciate the opportunity to kind of ramble here, dude. What are your next ones?
No problem.
List,
I just kind of want to like, I talking about EI just got me all emotional though. Like,
no shit. Know?
That's the thing. It's like, they just have, it's one of those times like, This band is like, they're a great band, but they also just have these people that are all just like,
individually,
so intimately,
super cool.
Just like intricately connected. Yeah. Like, I remember, it's funny because like, Ben was the guy that took my place as the annoying little kid that followed everybody around at CHSR asking questions to the point where like, he was referred to some as just like the question kid when he was young. And he just processed all that knowledge to become this like, just like,
I had drinks.
You know,
I
bastion of musical taste. I don't know. Like he just like and I was stoked to be able to play in a band with him for a little while and like play in like a couple of different bands with Gumby over the years too. And just like, no, Matt, like I will not go into the full details of the story, but one of the only times I've ever stage dived, I landed on Matt, who did not get out of the way because of the specifics of his personal situation of the evening, at like an SNFU show at the Pyramid Warehouse.
The Pyramid Warehouse, and, folks. We're going there. It got mentioned. Yeah, we're talking
exactly.
About it.
And then just Warehouse. Like that dude has been around forever, and he's just been like, he lived in Halifax for a while and played in another band up here called Rockstorm with Bruce.
Bruce Park. Yeah, before. Much respect to Bruce Park.
And and with TJ, who also played, who's like a younger
very
friend.
Cool.
Of yeah, right. yeah, yeah, exactly. Like he was in the band Rockstorm here in Halifax for a while, and like I'd walk down to Grickle Street in the North End, and Matt would be like sitting on his front porch having a smoke, taking a break from making candles out of Keith's bottles in his living room, while like listening.
I
to
love that gang.
And drinking
so
tea,
much.
And it's not just on Facebook like, often, you are man. New Brunswick incarnate.
He's from Northern New Brunswick. He grew up in
he's from Miramichi, and we'll let you know
and
that
that's
right
where a lot
away.
Of like the, you know, and, some of those like Aaron and some of those dudes, you know, kind of I think came from, right? So I don't have anybody from like Northern New Brunswick on my thing.
Yeah.
But again, yeah. So much respect to EI and Fredericton bar rock generally from about 1997. Until about, 2009, give or take, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it's just like the same kind of dudes working the jobs, hanging out, and just like, And it's like what you're talking about with the other scene, It's just like, maybe there's, 30 people who even go to the shows, and there's 15 bands, right? Or something like that. So I can't friggin' quantify that. I can't fathom that. But when you're a young person, and again, pre-internet people, pre-internet, when you're seeing people just kind of doing these weird analog kind of ad hoc, projects with their full passion and their full commitment. I'm just saying Bandcamp came right around right time to preserve some of this shit, because otherwise, a lot of this stuff, even more that's already been lost. Mm-hmm. And I guess now that we're just kind of taking a wide dive here just on Fredericton stuff generally. So I never checked out the Moncton Locals. But at Fredericton, there was the board deleted scene for a while.
Oh, yeah. I remember deleted
Campbell.
Scene as well.
Yeah.
Board Kilter
was
a thing, man. Like, for that, just that one, I don't even know if it lasted a decade, but it was like, there was a period of time where message board culture was like just.
People were harsh. People were harsh.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be like at my shitty
call
center.
No, it was horrible. Like, there were.
I'd be like on my call center job and like just kind of between calls, like, oh. There's some people trash talking, whatever band played at Oddfellows Hall or some Charbels or something. They're like, yeah, man. It was like, this is the internet. I'm going to, take a stand on some shit here about my local thing. And I was always just like lurking in the background on that shit. But I saw some things that were raised where I'm like, man, it was that message board culture. Yeah, it was the thing, right?
Yeah.
So Dan, who's next on your list, man? I gotta know.
Well, I was gonna say, actually, I'm gonna take it to Fredericton, but I'm gonna take it a little bit older.
Okay.
Wanted to talk about Neighborhood Watch for a minute.
Good call. Awesome. Thank you.
Who please also do. Grant from Neighborhood Watch was in EI for a while, for a period as well. Sorry.
I hope Grant listens to this.
Yeah, Grant. That's the thing. It's like I feel like. Punk rock is one of those things where it's like it's a genre of music, but once you get to a certain level of involvement, it just kind of like creeps into all parts of your life and kind of takes you in directions at different points.
You're never gonna be the same after, that's for sure.
Exactly. And like around the time that I first came up, like Neighborhood Watch weren't around, but their echoes were a big part of Fredericton and just like the folks involved, like Nick Oliver, who played drums for them. Was involved in a lot of other projects around Fredericton and elsewhere. Also really involved in like the electronic music scene out here. He was like the main punk rock DJ at CHSR when I first sort of started getting into the scene upon the recommendation of Ryan Hope of, Ryan, as mentioned earlier, my friend who had gone out into the world and brought punk rock back to Devon to me,
right?
I guess, and others.
Brought punk to Devon, and Devon was never the same.
Exactly.
Nor was the rest
but
of
yeah, anyways, Nick had that radio show. Others ended up taking it over, including Gumby, as mentioned earlier. But
okay. Gumby wasn't part of the Chickle Pickens show, right? That was Andrew and Mark, or
I can't remember what it was called when he had it, but it was like,
I can't either. But
yeah,
so,
but he did. He took that. That was kind of that Sunday night slot at CHSI was kind of an institution over decades. When I first came around, it was Nick that was doing it, and like Grant was still around doing a lot of stuff too, and was kind of that, like, in that pre-internet era, was that person that knew like weirdo pop culture stuff, like knew like
I feel like Grant deserves his own episode of this show.
Oh yeah, there's gotta just be that's just me, you know, all of us like, yeah, you know, just being like thanking this guy. But he was like, I remember it was a huge deal to me when he's trusted me enough to start lending me records.
That's major.
When I would that big young annoying right kid hanging out in the record library at CHSR.
He saw some future
for sure. And it's like,
you.
And just knowing that these folks, it's like finding out that they had this band in the 80s as well, that, you know, did enough to like make a bit of an impact. Like,
yeah,
I bought their 7-inch from a guy named Kim Kinnikin in Vancouver, who's like a, you know, fairly well known like record collector and scene guy out there who'd played in a band called Spark Marker for a while. That,
man, they were legit.
Yeah, I bought the Neighborhood Watch 7-inch off the guitar player from Spark Marker.
Spark Marker is legit.
When he was getting rid of some of his records. And when I was a kid, those were the guys that, like, when they would get bored of records and sell them to Backstreet, I would be creep in and just be like, oh, I'll buy those used records now. It's like, this is the cool stuff
Eric.
These older people
thank
had.
Thank you
and
for
like,
everything, Eric.
Yeah, exactly. Eric it's
Hill.
Like, I
Eric
yeah.
Hill, thank you.
And it's just like, this is the band that kind of, like, you know, that these folks are involved with, and they're back to, you know, they ended up getting back together in the mid 2010s, and it's not the original. They did a tour with the original lineup, but they were around mostly in the early 80s. I think it was like, Grant will kill me if I don't know the exact dates, but it was like early to mid 80s.
This is what the notes are for. You can put out anything on the recording, and there's
they put out, yeah, they have a 7-inch called Death at the Hands of Time, which you can get on Bandcamp. They also had tracks on like, they had a track on this compilation. It's like a 7-inch comp put out by like a British anarchist punk label. That was all like, it was like them and like all these bands from like squatter bands from Germany and stuff.
Squatter bands.
So they had,
Germany.
You know, it's like a band from Fredericton that kind of, you know,
had some impact,
had something out there. They had like,
they had,
you know, in an era where in an area where like a lot of bands don't do recordings that stick around, or it's just like a tape, you know, a dub tape.
Well,
anything.
And so this is why,
or
if
like,
I can just,
you know,
if I can just take to say that again, this is kind of what you're saying here, you know, the lack of, you know, documentation for some of this stuff. Mm-hmm. This is why university radio stations are such a vital part of any scene. Like, I mean, you know, they just, you know, it's like, who do you want to promote your thing? You know, you're playing at the show, you know, down and, you know, it's like you send your demo tape or your Burt CD or whatever off. You include freaking CHSR. You include whoever on your thing. It's just, if you have any interest in that era of getting your stuff out there whatsoever, you know, you just kind of include them. But now it's not even to say that like they're so odd. Yeah. These stations are so awesome. Mm-hmm. Even though I had a totally, like, again, my life wouldn't be the same without my time at CHSR for a couple of years. And, you know, it's like, if you were to go into those archives now, maybe there's only like three or four of those recordings on cassette or CD that people even would track now or know about. It's like, mm-hmm. your local indie radio station / campus station probably has it. And you can actually, you know, use your friggin', you know, sensibility and approach them if you want to and say, mm-hmm. do you have such and such? You know, I mean, again, I'm sorry. You know, I take a punk approach to my academic shit and I take kind of an academic approach to my punk shit. So, you know, just again, shout out to CHSR. I hope you're doing well. I don't listen to you anymore, but I hope you're doing well. Okay.
Yeah, that's kind of my feelings about a lot of things related to the punk scene. Sometimes it's
like, I wish,
but
you
I
best.
Hope you're doing well. Like even just a band that kind of got mentioned at the end of our West Coast episode was SNFU.
Yes,
I maybe didn't listen to all the records.
I know.
Like, cheap. You know, when you'd see, when they'd come to town, I'd always like swing by the show because it had been so long. And
I saw that. Yeah.
And like, and just like Cheapig was always just glad to see anybody there. Like their singer was just glad that anybody would even come by to say hi. And like, I remember walking by an SNF, a venue where I forgot there was even an SNFU show happening on my way home from work one night when I was like working as like a line cook in like, you know, the 2000s or something. He's being tired and wanted to get home and like walking by, not even realizing the show was happening. And he was standing outside and he was like, "Hey, it's one of the old guys." And like tried to give me a hug or like went to go give me a hug and just go, "Oh, glad to come up on the show." And I'm like, "Yeah, nice to see you too, buddy, but I'm glad you're here."
I saw them at the Pyramid Warehouse, and it wrecked my mind. I was just like,
"That was I'm just like, that was what is the really stage fuck guys is that gay?"
Yeah, it was like these guys are just so relentlessly intense. And I mean, you know, if you're some white kid and you're like, you know, 12, you know, 15 years old or 17 or whatever, and you've never heard of the Bad Brains yet, even necessarily, I mean. Like, just that level of intensity was just fucking unparalleled. They even get mentioned in that Bad Religion book that I read. They had so much influence and impact relative to what they were going to do. Mm-hmm. But according to you, we're saving them more properly for the Western Canadian.
I feel like
Canadian
we're just
going to
talk about them. They'll be talked about in more in depth on another episode, I'm sure. But like, even then, when I first started going to shows, they had just come through town as well and played St. Charbel's, and that was just like on their reunion, their reunion after their initial run in the 80s.
That was such a St. Charbel's was such a shitty venue.
Oh,
it was so necessary. Oh.
If
it
you
was
get
so
a chance,
necessary. Yeah.
If you get a chance, just to like, to just give general accolades to people involved with like the scene and arts community in New Brunswick, Matt Carter did a really cool little mini YouTube documentary series of old venues around Fredericton, including stopping outside St. Charbel's and just like filming outside and chatting about shows that had happened there for a bit. And like,
much respect to Matt Carter as a musician. As somebody who's like kind of led the way in terms of preserving and documenting the scene. I was never like tight friends with him or nothing, but because he was older, but I mean, you couldn't be doing anything in Fredericton in that era without, you know, being influenced or running into Matt Carter. Always a super nice dude. And I'm just going to say before we forget, since we're mentioning him, Nail Bomb Zine.
Yes, Nail Bomb Zine. He was involved with like Crunch Bomb, which was they ran that Pyramid Warehouse venue that we mentioned a couple times that happened a lot. Nail Bomb. I wrote some reviews for some of the reviews and stuff for Nail Bomb. So I don't know.
I think he even published some of our poetry from like some of the fucking spoken word era Molly's. He was just like you go into Molly's. Here's a guy with a coffee and like a pile of books. And like he's, you know, writing something, and he's like, you know, like probably 22 years old or something. Yeah. And I'm just like 15 or 18 or, you know, 15 or 16 or something. And I'm just like, that guy's fucking into what they're doing. And it's like, I realize now, like, he's just a fucking guy doing his thing at a coffee shop.
Exactly.
You know?
Like,
but
he was like in a pre-internet era again.
Yeah.
Making connections through like doing these zines and putting on shows and stuff. He was like writing to all these bands.
Much respect to Matt
like,
Carter.
All around like Canada and the US. And like most of the time, anytime a big touring punk band came through town, Matt had some hand in it.
Okay.
And now
he
through a certain time anyway. And now he's he's running Grid City. Which is like
doing something in Fredericton, which is
it's like an online entertainment magazine. It's actually really cool. He's published a lot of really cool kind of like, you know, weird stuff that's happened around Fredericton type articles, like about like when Alice Cooper came to town and that kind of stuff. And like the
weird
local, like
Fredericton.
World panic
I love
that
it,
ensued.
Man. That's awesome.
But yeah, Matt Carter's been doing his thing for a long time, and he's like an icon of Fredericton.
Exactly.
That's really all I can say about that. You know.
Well, okay, so what do we got now in terms of our list, dude? I mean,
I think
I'm
we could
saying...
honestly, I could, other than like, you know, I figured we'd both end up talking about Eric's trip a bit.
Well, maybe shall we end it on Eric's trip? Because
let's end it on Eric's trip really quick, because they're like,
yeah,
they're the band from New Brunswick of a certain era, man. You know?
And I'm like, going to start crying if I talk about them too much. I'm just
in the notes. You know what? Actually, there's in the show notes that I still need to send you. Yeah. I have a link to an article on Vice about just the influence Mark Gaudet, who played drums for Eric's Trip for most of their run, has had on like just the music scene in that era on the whole, from like the time he was 11 in the band Purple Night onward, and all his different projects. And
Purple Night got mentioned in this episode.
Oh man, I saw Purple Night play like the local anarchist volunteer run all ages space here. That's like, it was like a lot of younger art kids who just did not know what was going on, because it was just like these two old men from Moncton yelling about Acadie Man. Just
Acadie Man.
Yeah. And they're like, they knew it was like something like Eric's Trip related that had like cosigns of like, you know, whatever, like indie tastemakers, and just like did not know what they were walking into. And it was pretty, that aspect alone was pretty entertaining. But like Eric's Trip themselves were just like such a force, you know?
Oh man. I you know, it's like, I'm like, how did, I kind of asked myself today, I mean, how did it even happen? How did like, they go from like starting in like 1989 or 1990 being signed to like the biggest indie record in the label in the world, Sub Pop at the time, within like 2 years. I looked at that and I'm like, they just put out all these fucking cassettes.
Yeah.
And I remember being at Molly's, and I remember seeing like Nevermind the Mollusks.
Yeah,
like,
There was a 10-inch of Moncton bands called Naked in the Marsh that came out.
Yeah.
And then that same label put out their first 7-inch that had their first like studio recordings that someone other than Rick White recorded on it. I think it's Belong is what it is. It's like got like a drawing of like a woman with like really big eyes on the front.
That's right.
But it's I think just off that they and then their record on Murder Records,
and then you know from there. So this is again just sort of some people who were just like, they're hanging out in Moncton, you know, they're just being these kind of weird young people with their passion for music, and they're just, you know, they just decide, they're just like, we're just going to put this out in whatever way that we can, we're going to put ourselves out on these tours, you know, regionally. And it was just kind of the exact right moment. So their first LP, I mean, I've been listening to Love Terra just fucking all day. I've been listening to Love Terra for the past couple of days. And I'm just like, I love all of their records a lot, I think. Yeah. And if you actually look at their Sub Pop, Sub Pop's actually done a really nice job of curating their sort of post-career, because like all of their fucking vinyl are these like gorgeous, like, psychedelic purple and fucking
Totally fits their whole, because they were like because they were like this indie pop band, but there was like this weird like stoner rock element to them almost, that like
it was just
mugs and dirt bags who wore jean jackets and smoked a lot of hash, and like
really like it's yeah just, like that's you get just, this like whispery like here's yeah. like here's something to like, you know, Julie and, you know, the, you know,
like,
the, you know, the other guy, what's it, Julie and,
was Rick White and Julie.
Rick, thank you.
And then, when the band started, it was something for them to do together while they were, like, they were a couple.
And right, it's like, here's some whispering, broke up, like,
but they kept the band going, and, like, Love Terra is, like, the album they basically wrote about their breakup while it's happening, which is also their launch onto, like, you know, this next level of like indie rock,
the international,
you know,
stage.
Kind of just everything. And it's just this, like, you know, just writing, it almost feels like they're writing songs at each other, like throughout the album, but it's still just like, so great. Like
here's some whispery thing that I recorded.
Yeah. And it's like, they really had that lo-fi aesthetic that was so popular. Like
Sebadon.
They had it, like,
whatever,
yeah, you could
right?
hear, like, yeah, you'd hear the TV on in the background, like, while
or,
they were recording.
Yeah, or like,
it's like there's a quiet
over.
Breath. It's just
like, oh, that's
John
a cat,
you. Like, yeah. And it was just,
but then when they fucking played heavy, it was just it was like, you know.
Yeah, they could go from that, those really quiet, like, just touching, somber, like whispery moments. Like, I got to see Julie Dwaron play a few years ago at Sappy Fest in Sacramento.
She's awesome. That
and woman she had is so... the band Cancer Bats as her backup band.
What? they're like some dirtbag punk band from
Yeah. Right? They were her backup. Okay. They were her backup musicians, and it wasn't.
She's
cool. I one of the times they played at the farmers market in Fredericton, I had a broken leg, and she signed my cast, and I like didn't want to get rid of the cast because they were just like, you know, I was a dumb little teen. And they were just like the coolest band in the world at the time, and like on a personal level again, but
please
like
do.
So when I was in my first year of university, I met a girl on the internet in like the Usenet news groups era.
Wow.
Who lived in Delaware. Congrats. And just like dipped out for 2 weeks from classes at St. Thomas to like go hang out in like Newark, Delaware with this girl I met on a punk news group.
Good for you, internet. Man.
That was like the
fuck
one
Tinder completely.
That was like the one band we knew for New Brunswick was Eric's Trip. So that was just like what we listened to, like hanging out, like, you know, in this little like just crappy college town for a couple of weeks. And it was just like, yeah, just taking it to another, just like, you know, these big emotional moments kind of things tied to this, like, you know, the one cool band from where, you know, the crappy part of Canada that you're from.
So all I can say is, like, we could literally spend another probably hour and a half
like,
just talking about Eric's Trip and big emotional moments. And actually,
in my notes,
I even sort of mentioned this. I'm like, you know, you could even do a podcast.
Oh, like, for sure. That's
literally
just like,
about Eric's Trip and all related offshoots.
Yeah.
You know, you could track down all Julie stuff. Elevator to Hell. That first, like, Elevator to Hell record is fucking amazing, man. It's so fucking good.
So, just a quick story in here. When I lived in Victoria, one of my roommates got asked to interview Elevator to Hell for the local campus paper.
Okay.
And he invited me to go tag along with him. He's like, hey, nice. It's those guys from New Brunswick. And we go and end up hanging out back behind the show. And it was like, you know, Rick White is just like this kind of like ageless vampire looking dude. And we were just sitting off in a corner and he was speaking kind of quietly and monotonely. And we were just like enraptured and at the same time just smoking this like really intense hash. And we were just getting kind of like, you know, just really kind of freaked out by everything he was saying. And he went on for a while and it was like telling these like really cool and
you wise,
and stuff.
Weird
and
old
then
man.
After, yeah, and he was just like holding court for like, you know, probably 25 minutes before they played. And then afterwards, my roommate turns to me and it's like, oh my God, I forgot to hit record. Because we were just like sucked into the vibe of just like, you know,
being
the,
around
the, like
Rick
Eric's
and,
trip gone space rock of Elevator to Hell.
Dan, I can't think of a better way to go out with this show. We've hit an hour and a half and we need to trim some of that.
All right. Yeah.
But I just got to say, it has been an absolute slice, and we're gonna end up, you know, talking to all this again, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. What you can tell, I think, just by if you stuck with us so far for any of this, God bless you. Dan and I think are both, I think it just goes to show what we talk about here. Besides, you know, all the people that we talk about and didn't, it's just like, you know, when you embrace something passionately when you are young, you know, the benefits and things that you're going to experience from that, you know, for the rest of your life are fucking amazing to think of. And I just, you know, from all these, like, you know, encounters about, like, how the internet is just sort of evolving to, you know, tangible lived moments within your lives. I mean, I just think this is that there was that whole formative, pre-ubiquitous internet era where there was some internet capability. You know, but there were still people like doing zines and analog media and all this stuff where it just seemed like the culture was really there to be had and you could engage with it. And I don't know if, you know, people now kind of experience that or people who were into scenes other than, you know, independent music like we were, you know, could relate to that. But I think anybody who has been into independent music, you know, from a young age, just kind of, I hope that some of the stuff that Dan and I have talked about today resonates because every fucking place, you know, whether you're talking about Delaware or fucking Saskatchewan or whatever, has their own version of this. And, you know, we're talking about our time in Fredericton and the Maritimes generally on the show. But again, it's just, you know, so anybody who's listening, you know, post comments on whatever your thing, send us an email. I've got nothing else to say, Dan, except that this has been Today New Brunswick, Tomorrow the World.
This has definitely been Today New Brunswick, the world, Tomorrow the World. Hey.
I'm going to end the recording now. It's been a slice. Thanks, everybody.
It's been a slice. Take care. Thanks.
Bye-bye.